Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. These were the shouts of protesters which greeted Donald Trump as he came home to Trump Tower for the first time since his inauguration. Trump's slowness to call out the white nationalist neo-Nazi fascist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia for what it really was is only one of several reasons that protesters are outside of Trump Tower. Another is his warmongering with North Korea, which puts the world on a razor's edge. Jerry Hassett is with Veterans for Peace.
North Korea has been going on since 1950, and he's making it sound like they attacked us already. Most people in this country don't understand all the bases that we have surrounding North Korea and Russia and all of Asia. And Japan lets us use their base. There's a lot of places there. And he's supposed to be sitting down or have people that can negotiate properly sitting down at a table and talking, not making statements like he's doing about killing. That's what he's saying. Just, we're going to kill you if you don't straighten out. So Trump and his people have to straighten out and tell the rest of America how many bases we have and submarines. We have 800 bases, approximately 800 bases around the world. Not counting what's in the United States. How can you have what do we need 800 bases for around the world?
Even as North Korea presented leader Kim Jong-un with plans to launch missiles into waters near Guam and, quote, ring the windpipes of the Yankees, unquote, both Koreas and the U.S. have signaled their willingness to avert a deepening crisis, with each suggesting a path towards negotiations. Defense Secretary James Mattis.
My portfolio, my mission, my responsibility is to have military options should they be needed. However, right now, Secretary Tillerson, Ambassador Haley, you can see the American effort is diplomatically led. It has diplomatic traction. It is gaining diplomatic results. And I want to stay right there right now. The tragedy of war is well enough known. It doesn't need another characterization beyond the fact that it would be catastrophic.
Yesterday, Mattis said Washington would take out any missile seen to be heading for American soil, warning that a North Korean attack could mean war. While North Korean leader Kim Jong-un today praised his military for its plan to launch missiles into the waters near Guam, he said the launches would take place if the U.S. continues what he calls extremely dangerous, reckless actions. That suggests that the friction could ease with some sort of gesture from Washington. But will Trump stop warmongering?
It frightens me.
Eve Martinez is a former analyst for the city of New York.
I don't, and his lack of usage of the English language is what frightens me the most. I think of people trying to translate his blustering and his chest beating and his Twitter rants. And I think of people trying to translate those into a diplomatic tone, and it just frightens me to death.
Martinez says she hopes people are working behind the scenes
to counterbalance his tone. Luckily, he has no credibility. Even after such a short time in office, I think most people don't take what he says very seriously. The only problem, as I said, is the issue of translation, in that in terms of diplomacy and someone translating, it can get confusing and misconceptions can happen. But I'm hoping that people are working behind the scenes to counterbalance his bluster.
Lauren Phillips from Brooklyn says Trump's warmongering is despicable.
I think it's takes us back to a much more dangerous time. I think it's a show of force that proves nothing. It's a show of his own fragility and the fragility of the war industrial complex, and it's just further proof that he's not fit to serve and he doesn't deserve to represent us as Americans.
Eric Hosey is a Brooklyn artist.
I think the conflict with North Korea is a pre-existing problem, and right now we have a vacuum of leadership, and the Republicans have abdicated any leadership, and they're letting Donald Trump use the presidency for his own ends.
Joan Cole is with the Progressive Labor Party.
I think that we need to be out here today to challenge these policies that are not only Trump's, but they were Obama's as well, in terms of building for war. Under Obama, you know, there were drones all over the world. And of course, now things are sharpening up in Korea. So we're out here to bring this message that it's not just Trump, it's capitalism.
Meanwhile, South Korean President Moon Jae-in, a liberal who favors diplomacy, has urged North Korea to stop provocations and to commit to talks over its nuclear weapons program. In a televised speech today on the anniversary of World War II's end and the Korean Peninsula's liberation from Japanese colonial rule, he said Seoul and Washington agree that the nuclear standoff should absolutely be solved peacefully. He said no U.S. military action on the Korean Peninsula could be taken without Seoul's consent. The chair of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine Corps General Joseph Dunfor, met with senior South Korean military and political officials and the local media. He says the U.S. is seeking to ease anxiety while showing its willingness to back Trump's warnings if need be. The nuclear conflict with North Korea has made Guam the target of a threatened attack, and it has led to new calls to change the government of the Pacific Island, whose inhabitants are American citizens, but they have no say in electing the president or the use of military force. Guam is a U.S. territory where many of its 160,000 residents have long advocated for a different form of government. They just can't agree on what they want. Some want to become the 51st state, others want independence. Another faction wants to eliminate the heavy American military presence on the island where 7,000 troops are stationed, and the main thoroughfare is called Marine Corps Drive. The main activity on the island is the military. Many local residents and government representatives serve in the U.S. military, but others are resentful of the military's plans to expand its presence by moving thousands of U.S. Marines to Guam from Japan. New Yorker Rebecca Getz is an associate professor of history at New York University.
I can't think of any excuse that would make it worth endangering the lives of American citizens in the Pacific or Koreans in either North or South Korea. There's no excuse for it. It's appalling on every level.
And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. In other news, a fourth business leader resigned today from Donald Trump's White House Jobs Council. It's the latest sign that corporate America's romance with Trump is fading. This follows his response to violence by white supremacists in Charlottesville, Virginia, where he placed the blame on many sides, and he drew fire from across the political spectrum for not specifically denouncing the far right. Departing leaders now include the chief executives for Merck, Under Armour, and Intel, and now the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Alliance President Scott Paul, in a tweet, said simply, "I'm resigning from the Manufacturing Jobs Initiative because it's the right thing for me to do." Corporate leaders have been willing to work with Trump on taxes, trade, and reducing regulations, but increasingly they've found themselves grappling with cultural and social divides amid his lightning rod style of leadership. The CEOs who left the council quickly faced Donald Trump's wrath. He tweeted today, "For every CEO that drops out of the manufacturing council, I have many to take their place. Grandstanders should not have gone on. Jobs!" Merck CEO Ken Frazier, one of only four blacks to lead a Fortune 500 company, was the first to tender his resignation yesterday. He was attacked almost immediately by Trump on Twitter. The AFL-CIO, a federation of labor unions that represents 12.5 million workers, said it is considering pulling its representative from the committee. At a news conference late this afternoon, Donald Trump said race relations will improve when there are more jobs. He took questions at Trump Tower today after he said he and his administration had had a great meeting on infrastructure. He called groups protesting against white supremacists in Charlottesville the alt-left, and he said they were also very violent.
What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt? Let me ask you this. What about the fact they came charging, that they came charging with clubs in their hands, swinging clubs? Do they have any problem? I think they do. As far as I'm concerned, that was a horrible, horrible day. Wait a minute. I'm not finished. I'm not finished, fake news. That was a horrible day. I will tell you something. I watched those very closely, much more closely than you people watched it. And you have you had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. You had a group on the other side that came charging in without a permit, and they were very, very violent.
Go ahead. What you call the alt-left is the same as neo-Nazis?
All of those people, I've condemned neo-Nazis. I've condemned many different groups, but not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch. Those people were also there because they wanted to protest the taking down of a statue, Robert E. Lee. And you take a look at some of the groups and you see, and you know it if you were honest reporters, which in many cases you're not, but many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop? But they were there to protest, excuse me, you take a look the night before, they were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. Infrastructure question. Go ahead.
Should statues of Robert E. Lee stay up?
I would say that's up to a local town, community, or the federal government, depending on where it is located.
Are you against the Confederacy?
How concerned are you about race relations in America? And do you think things have gotten worse or better since you took office?
I think they've gotten better or the same. They've been frayed for a long time, and you can ask President Obama about that because he'd make speeches about it. I believe that the fact that I brought in, it will be soon, millions of jobs, you see where companies are moving back into our country, I think that's going to have a tremendous positive impact on race relations. We have companies coming back into our country. We have two car companies that just announced. We have Foxconn in Wisconsin just announced. We have many companies, I say pouring back into the country. I think that's going to have a huge positive impact on race relations. You know why? It's jobs. What people want now, they want jobs. They want great jobs with good pay. And when they have that, you watch how race relations will be. And I'll tell you, we're spending a lot of money on the inner cities. We're fixing the inner cities. We're doing far more than anybody's done with respect to the inner cities. It's a priority for me. And it's very important.
President, are you putting what you're calling the alt-left and white supremacists on the same moral plane?
I'm not putting anybody on a moral plane. What I'm saying is this. You had a group on one side and you had a group on the other, and they came at each other with clubs, and it was vicious, and it was horrible, and it was a horrible thing to watch. But there is another side. There was a group on this side, you can call them the left, you've just called them the left, that came violently attacking the other group. So you can say what you want, but that's the way it is.
On both sides, sir? You said there was hatred, there was violence on both sides.
I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides, I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either. And if you reported it accurately, you would say.
They showed up in Charlottesville.
Excuse me.
To protest.
Excuse me. They didn't put themselves down as you. And you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group. Excuse me. I saw the same pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner. Now, are we going to take down his statue? So you know what? It's fine. You're changing history. You're changing culture. And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had troublemakers, and you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets and with the baseball bats. You had a lot of bad people in the other group too.
You were treated unfairly, sir. I'm sorry. I just didn't understand what you were saying. You were saying the press has treated white nationalists unfairly.
No.
I just didn't understand what you were saying.
No. There were people in that rally, and I looked the night before. If you look, they were people protesting very quietly the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. I'm sure in that group there were some bad ones. The following day it looked like they had some rough, bad people, neo-Nazis, white nationalists, whatever you want to call them. But you had a lot of people in that group that were there to innocently protest and very legally protest because, you know, I don't know if you know, they had a permit. The other group didn't have a permit. So I only tell you this. There are two sides to a story. I thought what took place was a horrible moment for our country, a horrible moment.
Donald Trump late this afternoon speaking at Trump Tower in New York City. In other news, the deadly white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, is fueling a re-evaluation of Confederate statues in cities across the nation. It's happening as it had after the mass shooting by white supremacist Dylann Roof inside the Mother Emanuel Church in South Carolina that accelerated the removal of the Confederate flag. Statues are being removed or slated for removal in Gainesville, Florida, Baltimore, San Antonio, Durham, North Carolina, and elsewhere. In Gainesville, the statue known as Old Joe was returned Monday to the United Daughters of the Confederacy, which erected it in 1904. Gainesville Mayor Lauren Poe says the government shouldn't glorify a chapter of history that's a testament to America's original sin. Here in New York, there's another move to remove the General Lee Avenue sign that runs through Fort Hamilton in Bay Ridge, in homage to General Robert E. Lee. Also, there's a move to change Stonewall Jackson Drive, named in honor of Confederate General Stonewall Jackson. Congress members Yvette Clark, Jerry Nadler, Nydia Velasquez, and Hakeem Jeffries have all called for the removal after the terrorist attack by Roof. The call was renewed again today by local leaders. The Lee Street sign was in recognition of Lee's time serving at Fort Hamilton from 1841 to 1846. The street sign was installed by the United Daughters of the Confederacy. While the local New York chapter is defunct, the UDC is still up and running in Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, North Carolina, South Carolina, Texas, Tennessee, and Virginia. Membership in the Daughters of the Confederacy is through bloodlines, descendants of men and women who served in the Confederate Army, Navy, or Civil Service. As well, there are children of the Confederacy organizations up and running in those states. In Gainesville, Florida, workers hired by the Daughters of Confederacy chipped away at the Confederate soldier's statue. They loaded it quietly on a truck and drove away with little fanfare. In Baltimore, Mayor Catherine Pugh said she's ready to tear down all of her city's Confederate statues, and the city council voted to have them destroyed. Protesters in Durham, North Carolina, toppled a nearly century-old statue of a Confederate soldier on Monday at a rally against racism. The activists took a ladder up to the statue, and then they used a rope to pull down the Confederate soldier's monument that was dedicated back in 1924. The crowd cheered as the statue of the soldier holding a rifle fell to the ground in front of an old courthouse building that now houses local government offices. Protesters stamped on the crumbled remains of the statue one after the other. In Charlottesville, Virginia, the convergence of white nationalists and neo-Nazis with Confederate imagery will make it difficult for government agencies to defend having Confederate statues on their property. That's what Boston University history professor Heather Cox Richardson said. She said, "The idea that this somehow is about Southern heritage, I think that ship has sailed." Richardson teaches about the Civil War, Reconstruction, and Southern policy. She said, "It was always possible for people to look the other way, but after Charlottesville, I don't see how Americans can look the other way. You have to make a choice at this moment." Meanwhile, the far right has 9 rallies planned nationwide for this weekend. Turning to Donald Trump's pledge to repeal and replace Obamacare, today the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, issued a report which concludes that if Trump makes good on his threat to stop Obamacare payments to insurers, people buying individual health care policies would face higher premiums and some may be left with no insurance options. Today's CBO report estimates that cutting off the payments would add $194 billion to federal deficits over a decade. That's because other subsidies would automatically increase with rising premiums, wiping out any savings. The so-called cost-sharing payments reimbursed insurers for subsidizing out-of-pocket costs for people with modest incomes. Trump threatened to cut off the money, most recently after the collapse of the GOP health care bill. He says that will force Democrats to negotiate with him on health care. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York. Turning back to international news, the U.S. push to ouster Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro continues with Mike Pence in Buenos Aires. He says he's confident about reaching a peaceful solution for Venezuela through economic and diplomatic pressure on the country's president. Speaking at a joint news conference with Argentina's center-right President Mauricio Macri, Pence said they agreed in closed-door talks on the need to keep up pressure on Maduro for elections and the release of political prisoners. First, Pence visited Colombia, now Argentina, then on to Chile and Panama. On Thursday, Donald Trump claimed that action needed to be taken against Venezuela, and he declared that all options remain on the table.
We have many options for Venezuela, including a possible military option if necessary.
Venezuelan defense minister said Trump's threat was an act of craziness and extremism. He asked, "With this extremist elite that's in charge in the United States, who knows what will happen to the world?" Turning to Nigeria, suspected Boko Haram suicide bombers killed at least 27 people and wounded 83 in northeast Nigeria today. A woman bomber blew herself up and killed 27 others at a market in the village of Kanduga near Maiduguri, the epicenter of the conflict between government forces and Boko Haram insurgents, according to a village head and an official from a regional militia. 2 suicide bombers also blew themselves up at the gates to a nearby refugee camp, with no others killed but many injured, according to an emergency service official. The Taliban wrote an open letter to Donald Trump on the military situation in Afghanistan. It says that the situation, quote, was far worse than you realize, and sending in more troops would be self-destructive. A senior Taliban official told Reuters the rare decision to address Trump directly was timed to coincide with Trump's deliberations on the future of U.S. policy in Afghanistan. Quote, previous experiences have shown that sending more troops to Afghanistan will not result in anything other than further destruction of American military and economical might, unquote. That's what the Taliban said in a lengthy English language letter. It criticized the Afghan government as stooges, quote, lying, corrupt leaders, and repulsive sellouts who were providing Washington with, quote, unquote, rosy pictures of the military position. In Western Africa, in Sierra Leone's capital of Freetown, nearly 400 bodies have been recovered from a mudslide as rescue operations continue and morgues struggle to find space for all the dead. UN agencies are joining the rescue and recovery effort. The UN's Assumpta Massoi got through to Linnea Van Wagenen, special assistant to the UN resident representative in Sierra Leone. She asked her for the latest information on casualties.
Right now, we are dealing with about 13 different affected communities. There has been both the landslide or the mudslide, which has received a lot of attention, but there's also flooding in large parts of other areas of Freetown that we're trying to deal with. So really, our focus right now is to do three different things. We are trying to rescue those that have been caught under the rubble. As we go along, of course, the chances of finding survivors is getting smaller, but we are trying to work on that. The second is responding to the floods and the affected people, the survivors, families that have had to evacuate. We're providing food rations, dignity kits. We are trying to make sure that the victims are being buried in a safe and dignified manner, trying to help out with things like sanitation and water, which is becoming and continuing to be a big problem. And then the third thing we're trying to do is recovery and prevention. We are in the middle of rainy season. Last year, the heavy rains didn't come until September, so we are expecting more rain to come, and we need to be aware of where the risk areas are and how we can prevent something like this to happen again.
Can you just help us to paint a picture of how does the situation look like now where we had the mudslide and the flooding?
The mudslide is, there's still rubble. People are desperately trying to see if they can find anybody alive under there. We're using everything from big construction companies have offered to come and help clearing out the debris with their big bulldozers. But we have pickaxes and shovels to try to get some of the debris out of the way. But there's still a mudslide that's reaching. I think we saw it for about a mile. And it's quite dangerous terrain. It's very slippery. It's a very steep hill. And we have a risk of new rains coming in as soon as later today. So we're trying to get things working as soon as we can.
And what is needed most at the moment now?
Medication, sanitation, food, and shelter.
Do you have the resources now, or you still need support from other people or other agencies?
We're currently sending out, so we had heavy rains again last night. So we sent out five different assessment teams that have gone out, and we're actually meeting in just a couple of minutes to try to compare our notes and see what kind of needs we have. When it comes to the immediate response with food and shelter, that's one thing, but the medium term, which is risk analysis and those sort of things, I would imagine that there will be a great need. But as I said, there needs to be an assessment, and I think the government will probably come with an appeal for help when that time comes.
Access to water, food, and medical treatment, together with widespread homelessness, are expected to be immediate concerns for thousands around the capital of Freetown. The population there is more than 1 million. Médecins Sans Frontières is providing hundreds of body bags to authorities that the medical charity kept in Sierra Leone after the 2014 through 2016 Ebola outbreak that killed 4,000 people in the former British colony. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. With thanks to UN Radio, Akim Killick, and Reggie Johnson, I'm Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.